As we've introduced this idea of lifelong zeal, we pointed out that there's a lot. We pointed out that there's a lot of things that are illustrated biblically using fire. And so fire is a pretty good illustration of our zeal. And we pointed out, and I think well, that there are three essential elements if you're going to have a fire. You have to have a fuel, you have to have a heat source, you have to have oxygen. You deprive the fire of any one of those three things, and the fire will go out. So if we want to maintain lifelong zeal, then it seems to me that we're going to have to pay attention to all three of these elements of our fire. God, of course, is the heat source. Our character is the fuel that God is going to use. And purity is the air that we're going to use, or it's the environment that allows us to build the fire. If you look at the third lesson in Philip's book, he says or suggests that there are seven steps to having lifelong zeal. Why won't they come up? Okay. It's supposed to. Seven steps to having lifelong zeal. There we go. So he says, first, you have to prepare your zeal or prepare for zeal by eliminating the evil influences from your environment. That's just preparing the place that you're going to have zeal. It's no different than starting a fire and you clear away all the debris where you're going to build your fire. You want to get down to bedrock and build your fire there. So he says the first thing we have to do is we have to eliminate all of the evil influences from our environment so that we can build our zeal. And it will be lifelong zeal if we'll do that. Second thing he says is you need to ignite your zeal by getting closer to the heat source or getting closer to God. And of course, we do that through Jesus, right? We understand that that's the way that that works. So we're going to have to get close to God in our heat source so that we can ignite our zeal. Then he says, fuel your zeal. Keep fueling it. And you fuel it with courage and wisdom, diligence. And if you don't have those things and you don't keep working on those things, then your character falls apart and God won't have anything to ignite. So we fuel our zeal with character, with our courage, wisdom, intelligence. Then he says, protect your zeal from the danger of temptations. Watch out for things that can put your fire out and take heed to those things and get them out of your environment. Number five, he says, use your zeal. There's just a question as I was going through the material that Philip provided. He said, you know, this is more than just teaching other people. And I think he makes a very good point when he says, look at the different ways that Peter used his zeal. What can you think of? When you think of Peter, man who knew what zeal was, what can you think of that Peter did to use his zeal, to actually put it to use. Anybody?
He defended Jesus whenever he got an opportunity.
Okay, good point. Good point. What did he use it for?
Proclaim the gospel.
Okay, he did preach the gospel. That's undeniable. But he did more than that. It wasn't just the preaching. Can I get somebody to read Acts 3, verses 1 through 10?
Now Peter and John were going up to the temple at the ninth hour, the hour of prayer, and a man who had been lame from his mother's womb was being carried along, whom they used to set down every day at the gate of the temple, which is called Beautiful, in order to beg alms of those who were entering the temple. When he saw Peter and John about to go into the temple, he began asking to receive alms. But Peter, along with John, fixed his gaze on him and said, "Look at us." And he began to give them his attention, expecting to receive something from them. But Peter said, "I do not possess silver and gold, but what I do have I give to you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, walk rise up and walk." And seizing him by the right hand, he raised him up, and immediately his feet and his ankles were strengthened. With a leap, he stood upright and began to walk, and he entered the temple with them, walking and leaping and praising God. And all the people saw him walking and praising God, and they were all taking note of him as being the one who used to sit at the beautiful gate of the temple to beg alms. And they were filled with wonder and amazement at what had happened to him.
Okay. So Peter miraculously healed this man. And it goes without saying that we can't miraculously heal anybody. But can we still help people to heal? And what do you see as integral in helping people to heal?
It appears that Peter had compassion for people and he wanted to be helpful. He wanted to serve.
Okay.
And perhaps he was motivated to do that because of the love of Christ.
Okay. Good point. Yeah, Carol.
When he says he doesn't have silver or gold, he says, "Don't look to this world for silver or gold, but I have this spiritual help. It will help your spirit."
That's true. He wanted to help his spirit, and he did talk to them about Jesus. That's beyond question. But he also healed him. Now, I don't have the miraculous power to heal him like Peter did, right? But can I still help people to heal?
Yes, spiritually.
Yeah, we can do it spiritually, and that's an important point. Yeah, Mandy.
But I think in verse 4, it also shows intent. He says that Peter, along with John, fixed their gaze on the man and said, "Look at us," right? We have the intent to do something with and for you.
Right. Right. What else? People heal faster when they're in the hospital when their friends are there to support them. So I don't know how that works. I don't have any ability to help somebody heal in a miraculous way. I don't even have it medically to help them heal. I can't lay my hands on them and immediately they rise up and walk. Doesn't work that way. But if I use my zeal to be there for them, that will help them to heal. And I think that's one of the things that Peter does. Yeah.
Well, when after Peter had denied Jesus three times, he still was able to use that as to fire his zeal and to replace the negative with the positive from God. And I think it inspired him his whole life.
Oh, sure. Surely. Don't be beaten back by your failures. Keep going forward. Keep using. I mean, Ron's going in the hospital. He's going to have surgery. Everybody knows that Leslie's going to be stuck in the waiting room at the hospital. And she doesn't know how Ron is doing until the doctor comes out and says he's fine. I can't tell you how much it means that somebody's there at the hospital with her. And sometimes you don't have to say a thing. You just need to be there. So, yeah, I can help people heal. That's what my zeal does. Yeah.
Do we know exactly when that's going to be?
Yeah. I don't yet. And I don't know that Ron and Leslie know exactly the hour that's going to happen. But we will, as soon as we know when it's scheduled, we'll let you know. Yeah.
Well, in addition to visiting or helping someone get there, being sincere in our care and not just grudgingly hanging out.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. When I had open heart surgery, Kim said that one of the best things that happened to her as she was wading through all of that was I had it in a Catholic hospital, and a little nun came by and handed her a sandwich. You know, it wasn't a special sandwich or anything like that. Just she kind of knew. My mom had surgery. One of the people that we knew in Southern California came to the hospital, and he gave the family that was all sitting around in the waiting room, he gave us a couple of rolls of quarters. And you think, well, that's not a big deal. He just gave you a couple of rolls of quarters. And he brought a bag of snacks, the junk food snacks, because the only way you can get food in the hospital is to have money. You know, you have to go get it out of a vending machine. If it's late at night or if it's during the day, you can go down to the internet cafe in River Bend Hospital. And by the way, they have pretty good food. So we can help people heal. And I think that's one of the things that Peter did. Now, he had miraculous gifts. We don't have that, but we can help people heal. Help people get through the physical difficulties that they're trying to go through. You'll be there. Kim tells a story about going through a difficult time, and somebody who was her age came and stood by her. They didn't say a thing. Just the two of them hugged. That means a lot. It means a lot that you're there. Let's look at Acts 4. 25-31. Somebody want to read that? Again, this is Peter using his zeal.
You spoke by the Holy Spirit through the mouth of your servant, our father David. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth rise up and the rulers band together against the Lord and against his anointed one. Indeed, Herod and Pontius Pilate met together with the Gentiles and the people of Israel in this city to conspire against your holy servant Jesus, whom you anointed. They did what your power and will had decided beforehand should happen now.
Okay. What was zeal doing here?
Fulfilling God's word.
Yes. Good point. Let's see. What was the situation was going on here in Acts 4? Peter's been put in prison, right? After he had healed the man at the beautiful gate, they threw him in jail. And when he was released in verse 23, they went to their friends and reported what the chief priests and the elders had said to them. When they heard it, they lifted their voices together to God and said what we read, beginning in verse 25. So sometimes you need to pray. And zeal does that for you. And I know that the prayer that they uttered strengthened Peter and the other people that were there. He hadn't been, I misspoke, he hadn't been thrown into prison. He had been charged not to preach. Okay? But he said, we're going to preach. So they released him. And he went back. And sometimes you need prayer just to encourage you. Look at Acts 5, beginning at verse 1. Reading down through verse 16. Especially when you get down to verse 12. He says, many signs and wonders were regularly done among the people by the hands of the apostles. They were all together in Solomon's porch. None of the rest dared join them, but the people held them in high esteem. And more than ever, believers were added to the Lord, multitudes both of men and women, so that they even carried the sick into the streets and laid them on cots and mats, that as Peter came by, at least his shadow might fall on them and they would be healed. Now again, that's the miraculous healing that's associated with the apostles. We can't do that. We don't have that ability. But our zeal needs to show. Yeah, Carol.
It also shows the zeal of the people who are bringing people, their zeal and their faith, that it's just the shadow cast on them that they would be healed.
Oh,
that shows a huge amount of zeal.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Carol.
Well, I think my takeaway from this, yeah, we can't heal people miraculously, but we can serve others. And I think about living in a neighborhood, for example. Do our neighbors know that if they have a crisis or they have something happen, you know what? I can pick up the phone and call the Cruises and they're going to help me out. I can go knock on their door and I know that these people are going to help figure out a way. And one time we had a gentleman in our neighborhood who had dementia, and he kind of landed in our backyard. And after we sort of figured out how to take care of his needs and figured all of that out, one of our neighbors said something that I thought was just so sweet. And she said, apparently he knew the right yard to pick. You know, he knew, and he didn't know much. He was really disoriented and confused, but he picked the right yard. He picked the right people in the neighborhood to go to. And I thought that was a great compliment. Do all of our neighbors know that? The people that we interact with, the people that we see on the street, do they say, you know what, that's a person that if I'm in trouble, if I have a need, I can go to?
Yeah.
And I think that's what these people did. Let me just have Peter's shadow cast on me. Let me be in his presence. Let me, you know, because that's someone who can help.
Yeah.
I think that's important that we project that to the world, that we're Jesus' ambassadors.
Yeah, and I don't mean to downplay preaching the gospel. That's important. But it needs to be accompanied with all of these other things. And when it is, we do good for other people, but at the same time, we're protecting our zeal. We're using our zeal. And that keeps us from burning out, keeps us from just not being involved. Yeah, Bill.
Sometimes God blesses us with the things we can do. And I remember something that happened to me when I was a teenager. I had some friends up the road, and they were hillbillies from Arkansas, and they didn't have a lot of friends. But I played with kids, and we rode bikes and stuff together. And then I grew up, and we moved away. And 25 years later, I went up to the hospital to see my dad, because he was in there for evaluation. And I was walking down the hall, and I looked in this room, and there was that mom and dad in that room. He was in the bed, and she was visiting him. And I walked in, and they were so happy to see me. And so was I.
Yeah.
God put me there, I think. That was...
I can say for sure that it was an opportunity.
And he was putting on a good show, but his wife told me that he was dying of cancer and he wasn't going to make it. And he said he was going to be fine. And I got to say goodbye without saying goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. There, sometimes the smallest things that we do have the biggest impact.
And that meant so much to me as well.
Oh, sure. Sure. So it's when I use my zeal, it makes it stronger.
Speaking of that, I kind of like his point in this book where he says that zeal must mature. Sometimes when I think the first class that we had, you had us kind of label what zeal was. And a lot of people talk about when you first obey the gospel and you're young, you're very zealous, and then that kind of just fades out over time, it mellows out. And this thing is just the opposite, that our zeal has to mature over time, and it should get even stronger as you grow closer to God. And yeah, so, and as you practice it, as you do it, and you know, when we do good for others, as an example, when we do good for others and use our zeal, they benefit, but we also benefit because it draws us closer to God, and we understand that we're doing it for Jesus Christ. We're not doing it for us. We're doing it for Jesus Christ in his name.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why the elders want to encourage people to participate in our assemblies. And we want to encourage people to teach classes. Use your zeal to benefit other people. And when you don't do that, then the zeal that you have kind of dies. Because you begin to think it's useless. It's not, but you begin to think that way. And so he says, another thing that we need to do is spread our zeal. And this is where I think he's talking about helping other people to be zealous. And that's kind of, in a sense, that's Hebrews 10. He said, when we come together, we exhort one another. We build each other up. And we help those people who are here. And it's hard to help people that aren't here. That's a reason for being here. So spread your zeal. And then he says, tend to your zeal. pay attention to how you're doing spiritually. And this is inward. I have to think about how I'm doing. And I need to constantly be aware of my spiritual health. Not so I can compare it to other people, and not so that I can watch out for the health of other people. This is me being concerned about my own spiritual health. I had a really good friend one time who asked me what my spiritual goals were. And I thought about it for a little bit, and I started talking about spiritual goals. And I talked about my family. I talked about the church. He said, no, I want to know what your spiritual goals are. What do you want for your spiritual health? And we don't always think about that. I think women are particularly good at wanting to bless their family. And they want their kids to grow up to know God. Wonderful goal. But that's not your goal. So I think we have to tend to our zeal by having a goal for ourselves. Yeah, Carol.
Every time I think of Jesus' zeal, I think of how he had to go out by himself and he prayed through the night. When he chose the 12 disciples, he prayed all night before he faced the trials and temptation of the cross. He prayed all night. It humbles me of how his tie in communion with the Lord strengthened him and buoyed him up to do what was necessary. And it just leaves me lacking.
Sure. So set a goal for your zeal. Set a goal for what you want to spiritually accomplish. And, you know, this is goal setting. So everything applies that typically applies to goal setting. You know, write it down. There's something to be valued in writing down your goal and check in on how you're doing. If you're trying to get stronger, I'm going through this health protocol with Riverbend because I'm a heart patient. And so I go over there and I exercise. And every time I exercise, they write down exactly what I did, how I felt, and how I was able to do it, and all of that. And, you know, there's something to be said for charting your progress. Not that you get all puffed up about it, but every time I go over there, I try to beat what I did last time. And staying around other people is really important. I have to walk laps around the rehab gym over at Riverbend Hospital. And I hate it when there's this little old lady. She is about that tall, and she probably weighs a buck 10. And that little lady just walks like her hair is on fire. I hate it when she's there and I'm walking because I keep trying to keep up with her. Man, I'll tell you, there's something to be said for writing it down, charting the progress, and find people to be with. Find somebody to be a pace setter for you. And there's a lot to be said for that. So let's think about these seven steps. And he asked some questions in the reflection part of this lesson. Which one of those seven steps do you think is the hardest? And there's not a right or wrong answer. Which one do you think is the hardest of those seven steps to accomplish? And why do you think that?
I think protecting your zeal from the danger of temptations for me, because I feel like sometimes I think that we call that piece of the triangle purity. So the environment, there's some things in the environment that I just don't have control over that influence me. I have control over the influence, but I think that those things that are outside of my control are the most difficult for me to manage in terms of the influence that they have on me. You know, an example is I watch the evening news, and sometimes I just get so angry. I get so frustrated and wound up in it that I feel like it's taking me away from what my focus really needs to be. I just need to turn off the news. Forget it. I can't change most of that anyway. I have my sphere of influence. I have the people that I interact with, and I need to have some control with that. And so I think that the sort of the environmental things that go on around me, the temptations and stuff, that's probably the hardest for me, is to protect myself and protect my zeal from those influences.
Okay. Anybody else? That was the one that I picked, by the way, because I get influenced by so many things that come across my desk, and I see as I'm doing research on the internet, and I get emails from all these people, and I'm thinking, you know, well, my mom had a habit when we sat down for dinner, she unplugged the phone. And there's something to be said for that. You know, sometimes you need to put that stupid phone down and not pay attention. If it goes off, you don't have to answer it. And you don't have to respond to every message that comes across your phone. Lenny is the perfect example of that.
It's true.
Yeah. Lenny knows how to ignore stuff. And I'll send him 5 messages in 10 minutes, you know. Sometimes turn the silly thing off. This may be the greatest temptation that we face, is having this phone. You know, people say they'd rather go without food than go without their phone. That's what they say. I don't understand. But by the same token, I have my phone in my pocket 24/7. And it's laid by my bed, so I can respond to it if I wake up. If I hear a notification in the middle of the night, I'll roll over and check my phone. Gotta learn. Any other ideas? Which one do you think is the hardest?
I'll tell you, the high school class 2 weeks ago, we sort of set out a goal for what's our goal for this academic school year. So we're looking into getting ready to take on the new challenges of the new year. And as a class, as a group, we decided that our big goal was we wanted to draw near. So that is our goal, is together helping one another and inspiring each other. So it's that ignite your zeal, right? By drawing nearer to God and building their relationship with God, which I thought was, and it was, they all said it sort of a little differently, but it was a very sweet idea. So that is their goal for this academic school year.
Good point.
But that's sometimes challenging in the face of, you know, for our youngsters and, you know, our high schoolers. To look, and for those of us working in public ed, I mean, looking at all of those influences and the push and the challenges and the temptations that these kids have to face.
And we have to face,
absolutely. I'm just looking at, you know, this specific, but it's absolutely true. So maintaining that fire and igniting it when it needs to be.
Yeah. draw near to God. It's not easy to, I can tell you that one of the keys to that is prayer. And we feel ourselves becoming distant from God when our prayer life starts to suffer. Because that's the way we draw near to God. Beyond that, you need to spend some time reading the book, pondering what he's given. It's not just reading it. I mean, if you just want to read it, it takes less than a week for an average reader to read the entirety of the New Testament. And if you're a fast reader, it takes less than a week for you to read the whole Bible. There's only a very few words. There's more words in the New York Times on the Sunday edition than there are in the pages of the Bible. And people read the newspaper cover, or they used to read the newspaper cover to cover. Think about how many words you read in a day just scrolling through the internet or scrolling through Facebook or those kinds of things. Yeah, Anne.
As I was scrolling this week, something that came up and stopped me was Ecclesiastes 3.
Which says,
when that's the one, there is a time for everything. And the way that it was described by the person who had been through something, that if you stop and think about that, it does give you some relief from what's going on in your own life right now. He knows what's happening. It's his time.
Yeah.
And we have to accept that.
Yeah. Good point. Good point. I don't know if you have it on your phone, but on my phone, it will tell me how many hours I spent looking at my phone during the week. That's scary. So, got to think about those kinds of things. Anybody else? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about each one of these seven steps. So next week, we'll start talking about preparing your zeal. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm committing Lenny then to doing this, the next lesson. And Lenny may choose to do another topic, and we'll come back to zeal.
I'll stick with that.
Okay. So we're gonna look at preparing our zeal by eliminating the evil influences from our environment. What can we do to protect our zeal, to keep evil influences out of our environment? Yeah, Kim.
Can you explain to us how to use this binded version?
Because we're finished with this.
Okay, we're finished with this. So lesson 10. We're not doing
it. Well, we will eventually get to lesson 10. Okay.
But so put this aside when you get a book.
Yeah, put this aside. Use this.
Okay.
And so next week we'll be preparing your zeal by eliminating evil influences from your environment. That's
that. I'm just wondering if these were special ones you picked out that you liked.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand you.
She was asking how those got chosen to be in there. This was the free version.
The free version is a teaser that the publisher felt would get you to buy this book.
It worked.
Absolutely. And Philip has an agreement with Spirit Building Publisher that he can give this away for free. He can't give the books away for free. And he can't include anything more in this than what you have in your hands. So that's the way that Spirit Building Publisher tries to recoup the cost of typesetting and all of the stuff that you have to do to print the book. Okay? And those printing costs are high. Paper costs are high. Ink and typesetting and all of the things that have to go into that make books cost a lot. And just be thankful that this one cost $10. If you were in college and you were buying books, they're up to like $150, $200 for a textbook. So we're getting off cheap when they buy this for $10. But I think it's a worthwhile book to have in your library. And it's something to read and reread. It's not hard to, everybody find it engaging. You know, the book reads just like the first three chapters. So I find it engaging. And it's helpful. So Lenny will take this class on the week that I'm gone, next Sunday evening. Andrew's going to preach Sunday morning. And so come and I think Andrew will have a lot to say. And he's getting ready to leave. If there's anything we can do to help you put on Christ or to return to him, if, like we said this morning, if your walk has gotten a little wobbly and you look at your walk and you think, you know, I've gotten sidetracked here. I need to get back to what I really am walking in Jesus, then we want to help you to do that.